Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for April 4th, 2008. This week, we're going to tell you about some interesting relationships between predators and their prey, from agile alligators to sneaky snakes and, dare I say, noxious newts. But Suzanne's going to start us off with an interesting story about what appear to be some very chatty monkeys.
Chatty monkeys indeed. This week, I spoke with comparative psychologist Klaus Superbühler from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland.
Wait, what's a comparative psychologist? I mean, what do they compare?
They study animal cognition and compare how different animals solve problems, form memories, and communicate with each other. Anyway, Dr. Superbühler and his colleague Kate Arnold study the communication of old world monkeys in Africa. Lately, they've been studying putty-nosed monkeys in Nigeria. They live in groups of one male with several females and their offspring, and spend most of their time in trees. Apparently, the males repeat one type of alarm call to warn the other monkeys when a leopard is approaching. It sounds like this. But if they see an eagle instead, they produce a different call that sounds like this.
But then, every so often, the males gave the wrong call in this series of calls. So you would see an eagle and start hacking, hack, 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 and then suddenly it produced piao, piao, and then hack, hack, hack again.
The researchers noticed that every time the male combined the two calls like this, it was like a signal for all the other monkeys to scram.
If the male produced a series of hacks and nothing else, they would usually stay put. And if it was just a series of piaos, they would usually stay. But whenever the monkey inserted a few piaos followed by a few hacks into a call sequence, then we could reliably see that the group would then sort of move on and leave the area.
He says this shows that the individual calls don't mean anything by themselves, but only take on meaning if they're repeated in a series or combined in a sequence.
A piao itself doesn't inform the monkey if it's part of a piao hack sequence or if it's part of a piao sequence. So the monkey really has to listen, you know, to the subsequent calls before it can decide if the caller has seen a leopard or if the caller wishes to travel. He has to listen for at least three or four more calls before he knows exactly what's going on. So the crucial thing here is that these two different call types are not just given to name the predator, so to speak, to label the predator, but in addition, they're being combined into a more complex sequence, and that tells the other monkeys that it's a better idea to leave the area.
He says this is the first time non-human primates have been observed to combine different calls to create an entirely new meaning, sort of like a simple form of syntax in language.
Cool. Thanks, Suzanne. Well, when a prey species evolves novel ways to evade its predators, the predators often evolve new ways to corner their prey, and on until they reach a stalemate or somebody wins. Such is the epic battle between North American Tarika newts and the common garter snake. You see, the snakes love eating the newts, so the newts have evolved what you'd think would be a foolproof predator deterrent. Their bodies harbor the same deadly toxin as the infamous pufferfish.
You mean the Japanese delicacy that, if prepared the wrong way, can kill its victims with a single bite?
No, I mean the Japanese delicacy that, if prepared the wrong way, can kill its victims with a single bite.
Oh, I get it.
Right, and the active ingredient that causes that is called tetrodotoxin, or TTX. It kills its victims by suffocating them. Evolutionary ecologist Charles Hannafin of Stanford University explains.
So what will happen with animals when they eat this is it causes paralysis. Your muscles just can't contract anymore and your nerves can't function. And so what will happen is you'll be paralyzed. So what it'll do is it leads to death because it causes paralysis of the diaphragm and you basically suffocate to death.
Fortunately for predator and prey, the newts have a way of warning their predators of their poison before they hazard a bite.
They have a bright yellow or orange underbelly that they use as a warning coloration. And in fact, one of the things that they'll do in the wild is they'll actually flip their head and their tail up and form a circle in which they display the bright underbelly coloration.
This alone is enough to keep most wary predators at bay, but Hannafin says some hungry garter snakes are undeterred by the noxious newts. In areas of California where the newts are the most toxic, the snake populations have evolved a kind of super resistance to the toxin.
The snakes were so resistant that they could easily eat any of the toxic newts in these populations and suffer no consequences. They were so resistant to TTX that there was no newt that we found anywhere in the entire study area that had enough TTX to have any effect on them.
He says a single mutation in one of the snake's genes is responsible for their elevated resistance. In other locations on the West Coast, where newts and snakes haven't been in contact as long, the newts are less toxic and the snakes aren't as resistant to the toxin.
It looks like the main factor that sort of determines the toxicity of a given population of newts is whether or not they're co-evolving, or how long or the strength of their co-evolution with garter snakes.
Next, our guest reporter and Science Update veteran Karina Wu has a story about the underwater feats of another reptilian predator.
Alligators are experts at maneuvering through the water without causing a single ripple, and they do this without the benefit of having fins or flippers, like other aquatic animals. Now, scientists have learned one key to the gator's stealthy swimming style. TJ Uriona, a graduate student at the University of Utah, measured the muscle activity of young gators as they swam in a tank. He found that they use their lungs like flotation devices, shifting them backward to dive and forward to surface.
It's not only from front to back, but they could also fire muscles on one side of the body and not on the other, and that was correlated with rolling to one side or the other.
Uriona says the ability to move through the water this way gave gators an evolutionary advantage, even though they're not particularly fast.
The slower you move, the harder it is for them to change their direction, unless you use a mechanism like this. All the other ways an animal would move would require it to have some velocity in order to create that change of direction.
So juveniles can get away from predators without being seen, and adult alligators can sneak up on prey.
Thanks, Karina. Well, we're going to finish today's podcast by answering a listener's question about many people's favorite predator. And no, I'm not talking about us humans, but the cuddly domestic cat. Most cat owners today regard with disdain the little mice, birds, and other trophies their pets bring them. But as Suzanne reports, if it weren't for their predatory instincts, we might never have developed a relationship with cats at all.
That's right. Our furry feline friends have kept us company and controlled rodents for centuries. Listener Casey of Wichita, Kansas, wrote to ask where and when cats were first domesticated. We consulted feline geneticist Leslie Lyons of the University of California, Davis. She says, contrary to popular opinion, cats didn't originate in Egypt, but instead were probably first bred in Turkey.
Cats were probably domesticated in the Near East, which is the Fertile Crescent region, but then also cats that are in Southeast Asia and other areas of the world are fairly unique, so that our Southeast Asian cat breeds, such as Siamese, Burmese, Burmans, actually are more related to random bred cats in Southeast Asia than any other cats that are more Western cat breeds.
She says our symbiotic relationship with cats began when farmers started storing grain for long periods, attracting small rodents.
It has to occur within the past 10,000 years because it's associated with our agricultural development. So it's not until we settle down as farmers that we start producing large waste stores and large grain stores that cause rodents to be associated with humans. Once the rodents come in, then the cats see there's a whole new niche for them to develop, and hence probably the domesticated cat actually falls into that new niche.
Want to win fabulous prizes? All you have to do is submit a science question, and if we use it on the show, you'll win a Science Update Smarten Up mug.
Wait, that's only one fabulous prize.
Right, but not if you keep submitting those questions.
Oh.
You could win many fabulous mugs, enough to outfit an entire dorm room, ski cabin, or office kitchenette with matching mugs if you're really ambitious. Just call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT or write to us from our website at www.scienceupdate.com and tell all your friends.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll turn our attention to some smaller but no less fearsome animals, the arthropods, insects and spiders. We'll tell you the length some spiders will go to in the quest for a mate, and what a mosquito really thinks of your insect repellent. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got a hair-raising new science story every day, Monday through Friday. That can't possibly be true. If it were hair-raising, I would have a luxurious head of hair, which I don't, unfortunately. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.